Radio.
Listening to the Hour of the Time, I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to part three in a continuing series on protecting your assets, what you have to do in order to keep someone, anyone, from taking away everything that you have worked for all of your life. And literally, it can happen overnight. It will happen to somebody listening to this broadcast tonight. Now think about that. It will absolutely, without any doubt, happen to someone listening to this broadcast tonight. Maybe more than one or two people. With the kind of clientele that this broadcast attracts, people who value freedom, privacy, people who are patriots, which today is a politically incorrect mode of thinking, we are the targets of the New World Order, you and I. That's a fact. Whether you want to know about it or not, it is a fact. Now, folks, the only reason that you would want to do this is if you care more about those that you love, or at least as much about those that you love as you do yourself. If you're a selfish person and you don't care about leaving anything for anybody and you don't see the need to take care of your children or your grandchildren or your great-grandchildren, this is not the broadcast to be listening to, because I'm not talking to you. You must have the capacity to love. You must love others deeply. You must even be able to project that love onto those who are not yet even born. And you must be the kind of person who is preparing their world for them now, before they even are a speck in their parents' eye. Maybe before their parents even meet or ever are married. And for what we call our posterity, the chain is endless so far into the future that we can only imagine who and what they might be. But some of us have that capacity. I have that capacity. I know many people personally who have that capacity, because those are the kinds of people that I tend to gravitate to, that I care about the most. People who love freedom, who love their families, who love their children and their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren and their great-great-grandchildren yet unborn, and what they call their posterity, what we call our posterity, whom we love, though they may not even exist in this world at this time. For some, that's a very hard concept to grasp. In fact, I know people who could not ever understand it in a million years. And with me, and with many of those that I love, it spreads beyond our immediate family, to our friends, to those who are loyal to us, to those who believe as we believe, to those who give their lives so that we may all live free. Because if they're willing to give their life so that we, listen to what I said, so that we may live free, then they are willing to make the ultimate sacrifice for me, and I in turn must love them. I must love them. I could no more prevent myself from loving them than I could prevent the sun from rising once more tomorrow morning. I know this is very difficult for many of you to understand. Now, if you understand it, you are the right person to be listening to this broadcast and to be absorbing the information that I am giving you in this series.
When a man's an empty kettle, he should be on his mettle, and yet I'm torn apart. Just because I'm presuming that I could be kind of human if I only had a heart. I'd be tender, I'd be gentle, and awful sentimental, starting love and art. I'd be friends with the sparrows and the boy who shoots the arrows if I only had a heart. Picture me about Bunny, above a boy's name, Paul.
It's
a lockdown, Romeo. I hear a beat. How sweet, just to register emotion, jealousy, devotion, and really feel the part. I could stay young and chipper, and I'd lock it with a zipper. If I only had a
I'm a little rusty, yes.
Oh, dear. That was wonderful. You know, we were just wondering why you couldn't come with us to the Emerald City to ask the Wizard of Oz for a heart.
Well, the Wizard wouldn't give me one when we got there.
I'll give you one.
We've come such a long way already.
To Oz? To Oz.
The government, ladies and gentlemen, does not want you to know about the benefits of trusts, no matter where they're located, but especially offshore trusts. If they ever go after you, they might get you if you're in this country, but they'll never get not one single one of your assets, not $1, if they're located offshore. They will be safe for your posterity. The primary goal of the government is to appropriate every single penny they can from every single person. In this country, that's the goal they set for themselves. It's a socialist world, which means they must eliminate the middle class, and they have set about to do that, at least in this country. Oh, yes, they certainly have. And if they could force every single country on this earth to cooperate, they would. But fortunately, they can't do that. They can only pass laws to compel the taxpayer, if you believe that you're a taxpayer, to voluntarily disclose the existence of an offshore trust and pay taxes where applicable, but they cannot get their hands on the trust assets under any circumstances. And if you're not the settlor, the trustee, or the beneficiary, or the protector of the trust, they can't make you pay any income tax on anything that the trust does, has, earns, accumulates, dispenses, disperses, profits, doesn't matter what it is. You're not liable even under the convoluted criminal outlaw assertion of the color of law. The fact that the government does not and cannot control the laws of other countries is why more and more citizens are seeking asset protection offshore. Remember during the O.J. Simpson trial and the following civil lawsuit? There was this big to-do about where is all his money, all his millions of dollars he earned over the years that couldn't find it. I think one of his relatives was on television being interviewed and she said, well, it's because of the offshore. They never will find it. They'll never put their fingers on it. They'll never hurt O.J. Simpson financially. And it's the truth. Attorneys do not want you to know about the benefits of an offshore trust. You know why? It's the society in the world, ladies and gentlemen. In the United States, there are 2.67 lawyers for every 1,000 people. And there's one lawyer for 100,000 people. In fact, two-thirds of the world's attorneys live and practice in the United States. Yet we have only 50% of the entire world's population. Now listen to me very carefully. We have two-thirds of the entire world's attorneys, yet we have only 6% of the entire world's population. Doesn't that tell you something about the law and the your chances, ladies and gentlemen, and you better listen to me, your personal chances, everyone listening to me right now, your personal chances of being involved in a lawsuit in any given year are 1 in 4. 1 in 4. We are literally swamped with greed and greedy individuals and money-hungry lawyers who must manufacture, and yes, I said that correctly, manufacture lawsuits to keep busy stuffing their pockets. Unfortunately, many of the lawsuits that are filed are frivolous and border on extortion. Did you also know that the average successful litigant collects less than 50% of a settlement? The rest goes for attorney's fees. Did you know that no matter how a lawyer might work on your behalf, if you were to secure a $2 million judgment, one half of that, 50%, $1 million would go into the lawyer's pocket, although he didn't deserve it at all? And it would be that way because you, in your state of greed, would happily sign a contract allowing him to do that. Attorney's fees, court costs, collection fees. By the time you get what's coming to you, There isn't much left, ladies and gentlemen. Any wonder why attorneys don't tell you about offshore trusts and how to avoid lawsuits? Most citizens perceive offshore finance as too complicated, just like they perceive the law. But just like the law, it's very simple, very easy to understand, cut and dried, as a matter of fact. Even if they're interested in investigating the possibility, they do not know where to begin to get reliable information. More importantly, they do not have access to anyone who can actually set up a legal, non-discretionary offshore trust as well as an offshore bank account. And as you will soon see, this is no longer an obstacle, not an obstacle at all. Now, anyone can diversify his or her, and I'm talking about you in particular, you listening to this podcast, your assets abroad in countries that have higher interest rates with absolute safety tax-free. The average citizen, you see, because of the high school clique mentality, believes that if it requires them to do something that their neighbors and their friends and their relatives are not doing, that there's something somehow wrong with it. They believe that offshore trusts, international business corporations, or offshore bank accounts must be illegal and are only for money laundering crooks, tax evaders, and those with illegal motives. Couldn't possibly be for the stupid, ignorant sheeple like them, could it? Well, you know, unless they cure that status that they are in, it's really not. Ignorance that abounds and surrounds offshore finance results largely from misinformation and non-education. However, the fact remains that every single Fortune 500 company has offshore financial interests, as do the top 10 banks in the United States. All foundations, most charitable organizations, and almost all of the rich people in the world. In addition, tens of thousands of Americans now have over $3 trillion, that's trillion, not billion dollars, secured in offshore accounts. Are you listening to me carefully? I hope you are. Now rest assured, an offshore trust is 100% legal. A trust is legal anywhere, provided it's set up properly and provided it's administered properly according to the law. You see, I would never advise you to do anything illegal. Never, ever in a million years. Not only would I not advise you to do anything illegal, I would never advise you to do anything that's unlawful either. Remember, lawful always takes precedence over legal. Now, the government does not want your money offshore. Now, if you think trusts are illegal, look in the United States Code, do a search for trusts, and you'll see that the United States government administers many, many, many trusts. You'll also hear them talk about the Social Security Trust Fund, although there is no such thing. There are many other trusts that are, in fact, in effect. And particular departments of the United States government act as trustees for those trusts in the person of whoever is the department head, such as the Secretary of the Treasury. So if you don't think trusts are legal, why is the United States government engaging in the formation and administering of trusts as trustees. It goes much farther than that. One of these nights, we're going to get into it, how they create a trust in your name, making you think that you're the trust, and then making you subject to laws that you would not and are not subject to as the non-trust living human that you really are. Remember, this is the age of deception. And you better be pretty sharp not to be deceived. The government does not want your money offshore. They prefer that you keep it at a local bank where they can keep an eye on it, or take it if they want it, and know exactly how much you earn and what you do with it and where it goes. However, it is perfectly legal to take your money out of the country free of taxes. Absolutely, perfectly legal and lawful. Offshore investments are not only legal, but they're smart. And if you're not a part of it, then you're not acting with due diligence in protecting that which you have spent your life earning. You're not very smart, in other words. Assuming you understand that an offshore trust is legal, ethical, and highly effective method to preserving your assets, the next thing that comes to mind is, how safe is my money if I send it offshore? Again, all skepticism concerning offshore banking is based on ignorance and fear. It's really based on Hollywood movies that portray people who live in foreign countries as third world revolutionaries ready to rise up and destroy everything, bringing about a state of chaos, death, and poverty. And that's exactly where you get it, from Hollywood. And in most of the nations of the world, it is not only a remote possibility, it will never happen. Now, I'm going to tell you right now that your money is far safer offshore than in the United States. Now listen to me. I'm going to tell you that again, and you'd better listen to me very carefully. I am telling you right now that your money is far safer offshore than in the United States. And I'm going to discuss this in detail throughout this series. As a point of fact, offshore banks are safer than United States banks, and here's why. You see, offshore banks must maintain a higher ratio of liquidity. In other words, in the United States, we live in a debt-based society where money cannot be placed into circulation until someone borrows it, which means it does not exist, never existed. It's a figment of the imagination. It is a bookkeeping entry. This bookkeeping entry appears when somebody walks into a bank and borrows $10,000. The bank does not give this person $10,000 in cash. The bank on that given day probably doesn't even have $10,000 in cash in its vault. The bank makes a bookkeeping entry, creating an asset based upon the debt of the person borrowing the money. The bank does not give this person $10,000 in cash. The bank cuts a check for $10,000 and hands it to the person who borrowed the money, or transfers the bookkeeping entry to the person's account in that bank, making credit available for him to write checks against this non-existent $10,000. That's what they call a debt-based economy. And if you don't believe me, you start studying how this economy works. and you'll see that what I've just told you is the absolute truth. In foreign countries, that is not the way that it happens. Most foreign countries are not debt-based economies. They cannot have a bank that has empty vaults and millions of dollars loaned out and deposits for millions of dollars on their books. They must have the money. They must have the cash. They must be able to prove that they have it, or they will not long exist. This is about the only nation in the world where you can start a bank with nothing. Loan money, take deposits, invest those deposits, and make money, and nobody seems to care whether you have any money to cover what you're doing or not. Now, that's a stretch, because most of you could never go out and start a bank. You must have some proof of financial performance. But basically, what I just told you is absolutely the truth. And many of you have already discovered that. Offshore banks must maintain a higher ratio of liquidity. In other words, if somebody comes in that bank and says, I want my money right now, they've got to be able to give it to them. Now, if you think this is a stretch of the imagination, go down to your bank tomorrow and tell them you want to withdraw $20,000 in cash right now and see what they say. They will put you off for 3 days because they don't have it. They can't give it to you. If they did give it to you, they would have to close the doors and stop doing business because they could not give anybody else any cash. Everything in this country is done by electronic transfer, through checks, credit cards, debit cards, loans, bookkeeping entries, electronic transfers, writing checks. You understand what I mean? The cash simply does not exist. That's why the Federal Reserve, in their fear of what might happen with the scare of Y2K, caused $50 billion with a B, that's B-I-L-L-I-O-N, $50 billion in Federal Reserve notes to be presented and divided up amongst the Federal Reserve banks in case there's a run on the banks because of the fear of Y2K. Now, you have no idea what's going to happen if they actually have to pay out that $50 billion. You see, because that will cause the value of the dollar to plummet. $50 billion put into circulation all at one time will cause the greatest spate of inflation that's ever incurred in this country, ever in its history. The value of the dollar will plummet. Prices will go up everywhere, sky high. And you're going to get poor real quick. Inflation is not caused by raising the price of oil. Inflation is caused by pumping more worthless money in the form of Federal Reserve notes, paper with no value, or credit or debt into the economy in a short period of time. In other words, it makes large amounts of money available to more people who normally would not have the ability to get that money. When there's large amounts of money available, credit becomes available for almost anyone and everyone, anytime they want it, in just about any amount. And so, because everyone knows that everyone has more money, they raise prices on everything. Your rent goes up. The price of purchasing a house goes up. The price of oil goes up. The price of paper goes up. The price of an automobile goes up. The price of gasoline goes up. The price of Snickers candy bars goes up. Why? Because everybody all of a sudden has a lot of money and they can pay for it. But it never lasts very long. Because the Fed has a way of, over a period of time, taking the money back out of circulation and burning it. And so all of a sudden, the prices are higher, the money is less available, your salary did not go up, and you can't make ends meet anymore. In other words, offshore banks are financially stronger and better managed. Unlike their United States counterparts, offshore directors are directly liable to the depositors. Not one single person sitting on a board of directors in any bank in the United States is liable for anything. If they were, they'd stop doing a lot of the things that they do. If Alan Greenspan were liable for your loss of the ability to purchase things with a dollar that all of a sudden was inflated beyond your ability to keep up with it, they wouldn't allow that dollar to become inflated, or the opposite, deflated, if he could be found liable for your damages because of it. Offshore banks operate efficiently and economically because they're basically structured accounting systems. This means that they have low overhead and no expensive buildings. Ongoing advertising budgets are high wages. And this, ladies and gentlemen, enables them to pay higher returns on their depositors. To their depositors, I should say. They can pay higher returns to their depositors. Savings accounts earn higher interest offshore. Investments of every kind earn higher interest offshore. Offshore banks, ladies and gentlemen, operate the same way as banks do in the United States, and in fact use the same channels and clearing houses, but they do it in a responsible, in a judicial, you see, you have to know something else about any subject that you are going to talk about or think about or become involved in than what you see in Hollywood movies. Hollywood is fantasy. But yet, Hollywood makes up the total impression of almost everything in most American lives, whether it be in this country or offshore. Now let's talk about an offshore trust. Let's get a little deeper into this. An offshore trust involves four parties. The settlor. Now we talked about the settlor before, but we didn't really go into any kind of depth. The settlor can be a man, or a woman, or a trust, or a corporation, or a foundation, or it can be several people operating as a group. It can be a partnership. The settlor creates and funds the trust. The settlor appoints the trustees and names the beneficiaries. Excuse me. The settler must own the property he or she transfers to the trust and have full legal authority to transfer the assets. Any person who has, under the law of Belize, and we're talking about Belize Trust because it's the safest place in the world to form an offshore trust today. Any person who has, under the law of Belize, the capacity to own and transfer property may be the settler of the trust. The settler may also be the trustee, beneficiary, or protector, although this is not recommended. Remember what I told you. If you are the settler, the protector, the beneficiary, or the trustee of a trust, you are the target for the IRS to break the trust or to come after you individually if they can't touch the assets of the trust, which they cannot do offshore, can't break it, can't touch anything in it. They can come after you for not filing and paying the income tax under their convoluted criminal interpretation of the unconstitutional administration of the Internal Revenue laws and throw you in jail. The assets will be protected for the beneficiaries, unless that was you. But you can change that even from prison. Your assets, they will not touch. And they will be safe for whoever the assets are meant to benefit. So it's not recommended that you be any of these things. The settler cannot be a resident of Belize in order to comply with the exempt ruling for the trust. The settler's position is this. He or she is the person who initially wants to settle the trust. He or she contracts with the trustee to accept the initial contribution of money into the trust in exchange for the trust certificate units. It's like shares of stock. Whoever holds the trust certificate units as the beneficiary or as the settler until the beneficiaries are named is the recipient of the benefit of the assets of the trust either now or at some point in the future. 1 month, 1 year, or it could be every year, or every week, or every 2 years, or 25 years from now. You could specify that the beneficiaries, your children, will not receive one single penny until they reach a certain age, when a disbursement would be made. You could specify that they receive an allowance every month for the lifetime of the trust. There are many different ways that this can be done. You're not restricted to anything. Remember, this is done under contract. You have a right to contract anything that you wish. Now, once the settler has the trust certificate units, he or she then issues a letter of wishes for the distribution of the trust certificate units to the beneficiary or beneficiaries, and the beneficiaries can be anyone. They can be children. They can be old folks. It can be a foundation. It can be a corporation. It can be another trust. It can be yourself. It can be a family. In fact, every member of the family, including those yet unborn. Are you beginning to get the picture? After that, the settler steps out of the picture and no longer has any active management duties or ties to the trust funds. Under the law of Belize, any person who has the capacity to own and transfer property may be the trustee of the trust. The trustee may also be a corporate or artificial entity. You see, the trustee can be any of these things also. The trustee can be you, can be your mother. The trustee, however, cannot be a child. It must be someone who legally has the capacity to own and transfer property, to sign contracts and be bound by those contracts, to be responsible for their signature on those contracts. The trustee may be a corporation. It can be a foundation. It can be a partnership. It can be a man or a woman. It can be anything that you can imagine. It can be an organization. Anything that fulfills the requirement that they have the capacity to own and transfer property, to make contracts, to be responsible for the decisions made on behalf of the trust. The trustee may also be a corporate or artificial entity. The trustee may also be the settlor, beneficiary, or protector. But you really don't want to be any of those things. And I'm going to explain to you why later. But I'm going to tell you how to do it. The trust document specifically states that the trustee does not have to be a resident of Belize. Now, once the trust is formed, the trustee has the daily duty of maintaining the minutes concerning any activity of the trust. If the trust decides to purchase or sell some of its assets, these must be recorded in the minutes of the trust. If the trustee should so choose, he or she may decide to delegate some of the day-to-day operations of maintaining the trust to another person. This other person may be called the managing director or the general trust manager. If no other person is appointed, the trustee retains those duties. Now, the settlor can make provision that some other person, including the settlor, could be appointed to the position of the managing director or the general trust manager. It can be a part of the contract establishing the trust. The trustee is appointed by the settlor to manage the trust for the benefit of the beneficiaries. Selecting the right trustee, ladies and gentlemen, is extremely important because the trustee completely controls the trust. As a settlor, you should never, ever be the trustee if you want creditor protection and if you want to be safe from the infernal revenue service, the Nazi jackbooted thugs. You must appoint one foreign trustee. And let me tell you something right now that you may not understand. Foreign trustees are plentiful and professionally qualified to administer offshore trusts. And there's never been one interest that they have ever displayed in ever, in my investigation of offshore trusts, of stealing any one demon, even one single penny from any trust that they administer. Most are chartered accountants or attorneys who have passed special examinations, have taken great pains to secure special education, specifically to administer trusts. There are also trust companies as well as banks, which are institutional trustees. They have no interest in destroying their reputation and losing all of the promising business that they have or may obtain in the future by stealing even one nickel from anyone. Beneficiaries are those who benefit from the trust and receive trust income and or assets. Whether it's today, next week, next month, next year, 10 years from now, 25 years from now, or 100 years from now. Those whom you want the trust to benefit are the beneficiaries. Now, there are several different types of beneficiaries. Those whom you want the trust to benefit during your lifetime are who will inherit the trust assets after your death. are one kind. They can be either named or unnamed. You can name individuals or name a group or class, such as all surviving children. Not only can you designate the beneficiaries by name or class, but they can also be profit or non-profit corporations or foundations or organizations or partnerships. Other trusts are any other American or foreign legal entity that you can possibly think of. An unnamed beneficiary can be a bearer beneficiary. The trust can issue bearer certificates with no name, and whoever holds the certificates in their possession are the beneficiaries of the trust, and they will be the beneficiaries of the trust as long as they hold that document, whether you are alive or dead, for the entire life of the trust. As the settler, you can expand, contract, terminate, or shift beneficial interests at any time, subject only to the trustee's agreement. And if the trustee disagrees, you can't do it. And so when you set it up, you must have this in mind. You must do it in a manner that ensures that the trustee is going to agree with whatever your wishes happen to be. Now, the trustee can only agree to a certain point. The trustee can never break the law or go against the law to harm, damage, irresponsibly deplete, or destroy the assets of the trust, regardless of what your wishes may be. And the beneficiary, ladies and gentlemen, cannot ever live in Belize. The settler cannot live in Belize, the beneficiary cannot live in Belize, and the protector cannot live in Belize. You may visit Belize, you may vacation in Belize, but you may not live there. You may not vacation for a long enough time to be qualified as a resident of Belize, because then you endanger your trust under the law. The protector is the individual, company, corporation, trust, partnership, or any other entity who oversees the trustee. You see, the trustee is not just there doing what they want to do. There is a protector of the trust. The protector, like the trustee, protects the intent of beneficiaries, the interest of the beneficiaries. The protector, more specifically, prevents misdeeds by the trustee. The protector can only veto trustee decisions that appear inappropriate by the trustee. The protector cannot force the trustee to undertake any act, but he can prevent trustee actions. And here's an example. Listen to me carefully. A trustee may require the protector's approval to sell investments or withdraw funds without the settler's approval. In this case, the protector verifies the settler's approval. The protector ensures that the trustee acts in best interest of beneficiaries. The protector's most important power is the authority to replace the trustee should the trustee get just totally out of hand. It is through the settler's authority to change the protector and protector's authority to change the trustee that the settler indirectly controls the trustee and the trust. You see, the protector receives a benefit in the form of some kind of payment for being the protector, not just of one trust, but many trusts. It's their livelihood. The protector is there to make sure that the trustee does his or her job. If the settler submits a list of wishes to the trustee, that the settler believes must be carried out in the best interest of the trust and the trustee refuses, the settler can inform the protector of the trustee's actions. The settler can take a look at it. And if he agrees with the protector, can take a look at it, if he agrees with the settler, remember, he cannot make the trustee do anything, but he can prevent the trustee from doing things and can, in fact, change the trustee. The trustee does not want to lose his job. He doesn't want a black mark on his career. And if the settler sees that neither one of these people are carrying out his wishes and they're reasonable and they're in the best interest of the trust and the beneficiaries, the settler can change the protector for a protector who will change the trustee. I hope you understand how this works. Now you could, but I'm telling you right now, you don't want to be. You could be both the protector and the settler. But that would open you up to liability because a U.S. court could decide that you control the trust, thus forcing you to turn over assets to satisfy creditors. In fact, in the United States now today, they're saying that if you're the settler, you actually own the assets in the trust, and they're taxing you on that if they can find out what they are. That's why I'm telling you, you can't get away with having a trust in this country anymore. They're going after people who have trust. And even though you may have been safe up to this time, and maybe for some time into the foreseeable future, at some point in the future, trusts will become illegal in this country. And if you don't believe they can do that, look what Hitler did in Germany, and I'm telling you right now, the United States of America is becoming the Fourth Reich. Whatever Hitler dreamed of will be done in this country. In fact, much of it is already being done. Foreign protectors place the protector beyond the reach of an American creditor's subpoena and the power to examine the protector under oath. You hear what I'm saying? A foreign protector is beyond an American court's power to subpoena him or her and bring them into court to be examined under oath. And even if they were, according to the laws of Belize, they cannot disclose any information about the trust. The protector cannot live in Belize in order to satisfy the requirement of being an exempt trust. But that's no problem. You just don't want the protector to be living in the United States of America. Now, how does the settler communicate instructions to the trustee? Well, it's very simple, folks. The settler sends a letter of wishes. You see, the settler cannot tell the trustee what to do, and the trustee is not bound to obey anything that the settler says once the trust is in operation, beneficiaries have been named, and the trustee is now in control of the trust. But the settler sends a letter of wishes that contains the instructions or request. And it should always be in the form of a request, never in the form of instructions or an order. The settler can, for instance, ask the trustee to send funds, request a change in beneficiaries, make new investments, request a loan to himself or another beneficiary, or appoint a new trustee or protector. While it appears that trustee has full control and authority, the settler, in fact, has considerable control over the trust and the trustee. It is always in the trustee's best interest to take care of the settler's reasonable requests. Now listen to what I said. Reasonable requests. If you're going to get crazy, forget it. Because by law, he could be held criminally liable if he does the wrong thing. It goes against the best interest of the trust and or the beneficiaries. And he's not going to do it even if you replace him. But he will He will carry out any reasonable request that you may have. He has no reason not to. In fact, he has every reason to do it for you. Otherwise, he will find himself out of a job. Now, when it comes to offshore trusts, the most common question is, how do I know I can trust the trustee? Well, the way the trust is set up ensures it. After all, when someone, particularly a stranger in another continent, on some island, controls your money, you have a legitimate concern that the trustee may embezzle, squander, lose your money, or make bad investments. In fact, if you weren't worried about that, I would question your sanity. But in reality, there is very little basis for this concern. Foreign trustees are known to have absolutely impeccable track records for honesty and prudence. In fact, I have never heard of one instance where an individual has ever lost $1 to theft by a foreign trustee. In addition to the inherent honesty of the trustee, an offshore haven cannot afford an embezzlement scandal. You see, folks, they make their money on building confidence to attract foreign investors, foreign money. That's why they set up these laws. That's why they protect the trusts. It is good, and in many instances, is the very foundation of their economy. And if for any reason a trustee should prove dishonest, the tax haven will move towards making quick restitution. In other words, the country will make restitution because they cannot and will not afford, nor do they want, nor will they allow the negative publicity to occur. Because everybody would bail out. Remember, they're all there to protect their money. That's the only reason they have their money and their trusts and their IBCs in that country. And if they see that people are having their money or their assets stolen, embezzled, they will bail. They will leave. By the thousands, by the tens of thousands, by the hundreds of thousands, they will bail with their money and go somewhere else. You see? Well, that's it, folks. That's it for tonight. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to wish you a good night. God bless you. And Annie, Pooh, and Allison, I love you. I miss you terribly. I wish so much that we could be together. But you see, if I don't fight this battle, you may live a future life in enslavement. And I love you so much, I would rather not see you than ever, ever believe that that's the kind of life that you were forced to live because I did not do what I was supposed to do. May God protect you and keep you safe.
Yes, naturally you miss it when you're born to be a city without a feminine one. But I could show my prowess, be a lion, not a mouse, if I only have the name. And straight is no denying, I'm just a dandelion. I'd be brave as a blizzard, I'd be gentle as a lizard, I'd be clever as a kid.
If the wizard is a wizard, we'll
and I'm sure to get a brave
a home
denial.
Like to get a head start, folks, go to our website, harvest-trust.org. Click on the Belize Offshore Trust Program and start from there. I'll help you any way I can. If you keep listening to this broadcast, you won't need much help.
Yeah, hi, y'all. I'm John P. Lightning, and I'm here with 11LR and I programming every Sunday night from...